Catherine Casey. She's a friend of the show. She is one of the city's most accomplished elder law attorneys. She's a partner at Dutton Casey and Messarellis here in Chicago. She's one of the few certified elder law attorneys in Illinois and focuses her practice on all of these issues. Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Karen, thanks so much for having me back.
I want to talk about Jimmy Buffett. All right, so his estate has all of these very just amazing amounts of money and assets, and even just the monthly income that is being generated by some of these things is astounding. So tell us about this lawsuit, what we know about it.
Well, what we know about it is we've got a dispute over who controls the trust, and specifically who controls how the money is invested. So on the one hand, we've got Jimmy's widow, and she's basically alleging that the financial advisor, this is Jimmy's longtime business manager, financial advisor, who's her co-trustee, she's alleging that he's making too little income on the trust investments, that he's taking too much money in fees, and that he's failed to properly keep her informed about what's going on with the money. So he's now alleged against her that she's bad at managing money, that Jimmy thought she was bad at managing money, and that she's being hostile and just generally uncooperative and interfering with his ability to manage this trust. So, you know, clearly they're not on the same page and each wants the other one removed.
So, yeah, I mean, you can see how this goes. First of all, I do want to say, because I went and looked this up. I mean, the widow, she was married to him for a long time. This was not just like, you know, he was married to her for 2 years and he was afraid she was going to go off and, you know, waste the money. But I mean, this was a long-term marriage. And yet he wanted to have somebody with financial savvy, right? Because, you know, just because you're smart and just because you're a loving spouse doesn't mean you know how to manage a $275 million estate, right? But
right.
What do you think, Katie? I mean, should this have been done this way? I mean, obviously, it's always, you know, it's always clearer when you're looking back at it now. But what if you're going to analyze what went wrong with this estate plan, what would you say about it?
Well, you're right that this is a long-time marriage, and they did have children together. But there are many, many reasons why Jimmy would have put an estate plan in place like this. In fact, it's actually a pretty common plan. The type of trust that Jimmy put in place is pretty typical for people who are looking to shelter their money from the estate tax. It's also pretty common for spouses who are concerned that their widow might remarry and leave all the money to a second spouse rather than to the kids. And, you know, honestly, we use these trusts all the time to protect the surviving spouse from financial exploitation, bad financial judgment, potential lawsuits, and even long-term care costs. I mean, you can tell, I think, by looking at this trust contest that Jimmy, his intention was to take care of people. He wanted to take care of his wife. He probably wanted to make sure that his longtime business manager and financial advisor continued to be involved in the way things ran. It really looks like he was trying to do the right thing. But with that 2020 hindsight you talk about, what we can see here is the failure that these two people just can't communicate with each other. They're not communicating. And because they're two co-trustees, there's no one to break the deadlock when they disagree. So there's no tiebreaker here when he's got these two co-trustees.
Katie, I'm sure you see this all the time, but I once handled a case, and it was just the oddest case. It was a woman left a very small estate to her only two children. And it was really just a house and some assets, just really a small estate. But the son wanted to sell the house. The daughter didn't want to sell the house. And do you know how many thousands of dollars we went through to determine that? Because, you know, when you have a 50% trustee right to make a decision and the other one doesn't want to do it, maybe just for, in this case, it was just for the sake. If one said, yes, I want to sell it, and the other one said no, the other one would switch and say yes, and the other one would say no. Just for the purpose of disputing, there was no third person to break the tie. And it was just so sad to watch because there was nothing I could do other than just get it to resolution. So do you see that? I mean, is there a way to handle that would break that tie?
Yeah, there are a few things short of court involvement that could have been utilized in advance, at least in Illinois, where we practice Karen. And those are mechanisms like utilizing a professional fiduciary, not the financial advisor, but a professional fiduciary, like a bank, a professional trustee who wouldn't have that same inherent conflict of interest that a financial advisor or business manager would have. And also using things like a trust protector or a trust committee or an investment committee, essentially involving a group of professionals or other people to break these ties. It's not unreasonable for a wife to be co-trustee of her own trust, right? That's pretty reasonable. But we would want her to have resolution through some mechanism short of having to go to court and sue.
And I guess a lot of people are probably looking on and saying, it's $275 million. What are you guys fighting about? I mean, you know, it's more than just the money, right? I mean, when it comes to things like this.
Yeah. So, you know, the reason it's in the news is because he's famous and there's a lot of money involved. But the fact of the matter is that the lessons of Jimmy Buffett's estate are the same lessons for all of us, for what I call regular estates. I mean, these estate disputes, they're not really about money. They're about the people involved. They're about the people who care about what happens with the money and who can't communicate on how best to manage it. And it doesn't matter how rich you are. It doesn't matter how poor you are. It doesn't matter how much money you've got or what kind of money you've got. We all have people in our lives who we love, and we want them taken care of after we're gone, and we don't want to see them fighting like this.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it is just awful to see this. And let's take a break. And when we come back, if anybody has an estate planning question for Katie, I thought maybe we'd throw a few in here because I know people really do have these questions, whether it's about this case or about your own situation, about trustees, powers of attorney, and those types of things. And when we come back, I want to talk more with you, Katie, about how to choose the professionals, how to choose the executors and the trustees and the powers of attorney in your life to make sure that when you pass, not only did that estate plan that you were smart enough to devise, smart enough to have and maintain, but that it gets executed the way you want it executed. We're here talking to Catherine Casey. She's an elder law attorney here in Chicago. Let's get your contact information before we take the break.
My phone number is 312-899-0950.
The Jimmy Buffett lawsuit, and kind of using it as a springboard to discuss issues relating to estate planning that people might have. And, you know, what do you think is going to happen here? You know, your experience, Katie, when you've got a widow who doesn't like the way the financial advisor is handling this and vice versa. What is going to give, and what do you think a court is going to do in the long run?
Oof, Karen, you know, your guess is probably as good as mine on that point, but you're right. Something's really got to give here. I mean, in my opinion, it's highly unlikely that the widow will be removed. That would be very, very unusual. And even if the financial advisor is removed, he'd certainly be replaced by an independent trustee. I mean, most trusts require that there be a trustee involved who is independent. But, you know, what's most likely going to happen is they're going to come to some kind of agreement. I mean, this process is going to sort of force them to communicate with each other and lay out a plan as to how things are going to be run going forward. Otherwise, the judge is going to have to figure that out for them and find a way to keep them out of court in the future.
You know, my guess is that there was tension between them before, right? You know, this tension probably didn't just come, you know, right out of the blue, you know, and then they have different motivations, right? I mean, the wife is you know, emotionally probably still mourning the loss of her husband. This was stuff that was acquired during the marriage, so she probably feels proprietary over a lot of it. And she's got children that she wants to protect and probably grandchildren. And then you've got the financial advisor whose job is just to, you know, make sure that most money gets generated, you know, as possible. So, you know, you look at people's motivations here and you see how these conflicts arise. But let's talk about this. So you've got a person who is before you, Katie, and says, I need an estate plan and I have powers of attorney. Okay, that's, you know, can you explain just quickly what a power of attorney is and tell us who you suggest or who will make the best power of attorney for most people?
Oh, it's really complicated. It's It's a hard decision to make. And honestly, in my experience, it's probably the biggest impediment to doing an estate plan in the first place, is making this decision about who are we going to name to take care of our affairs for us while we're alive. You know, the power of attorney for property actually affects us while we're alive, because it's the document that controls our money and our financial decisions when we can't manage our money ourselves. Totally unlike a trust in terms of what happens after we pass away. So considering who's going to be in that position, who's going to best serve us, we're really looking for someone who's totally honest and trustworthy and good with money, you know, basically a good ethical person who's able to administer a lot of complex stuff while we're living. I mean, that's a pretty tall order for most people.
And does, you know, I have a texter who says three children, only one is in Illinois. Is the person in Illinois necessarily the best person to be an executor or trustee?
That's such a great question. You know, our world is so globalized. We're so interconnected now with you know, digital access and electronic access. I don't feel that geography matters. What matters is that the person really be good at managing money. That's a rare quality, I got to say, people who are really good managing money, and they need to be loyal and honest to us. So I would pick that, hands down, any day over geographic consideration.
You know, and you do see family members who get envious about why did mom pick Karen to be the executor. You know, first of all, it's a thankless job in some ways, because, you know, if depending on how complicated the estate is, you know, it's a lot of work. I mean, you might be closing out accounts, you might be paying bills, you might be finding assets and going to the bank. And I mean, you know, it can be very involved, and not everybody wants to do that. But I do see family members who get mad and get jealous and envious about why did mom pick this person over the other person. Do you see that?
I do see that. I do. And frankly, you know, to your point, it's really common that most people don't want this job. The initial reaction for most people is, thank goodness I wasn't named. It's too much work. It's too time consuming. But, you know, there's a lot of sibling rivalry. This really happens a lot with kids. There's a lot of sibling rivalry. Who did mom love more? Who did dad love more? And that can come out in the choosing of the financial decision maker or the medical decision maker. And it becomes really, really tricky for parents to choose amongst their kids and balance out who's going to be doing what, and are they going to get along?
And I get this question a lot when we talk about estate planning. I get a lot of calls from WGN listeners who say, you know what, there was a trust and my brother is the trustee. He's not letting me know anything about what's going on. I know that I'm a beneficiary. It's been a year and a half. I know it's not in court because there's no probate, which was avoided, meaning, you know, there's nothing on the public docket that shows what's going on. What are my rights? I think he's stealing money. What happens in that situation, Katie?
Yeah, so this is probably the number one reason why trust disputes land on a lawyer's desk. It is lack of communication. The number one way to make a beneficiary upset is to not fully disclose what's going on, to not keep them timely informed, and to drag things out. It really is just a failure of communication. So trust beneficiaries do have rights to information. They have the right to disclosures. They have the right to be updated. They have the right to an accounting in most instances to see exactly how the money is being managed. The hard part about a trust is that it's an entirely private document. What that means is there is no trust police out there monitoring your trustee. There is no government branch that's monitoring trustees in general. There's no enforcement of trustees or the management of trust beyond what a beneficiary brings forth through a demand letter or a lawyer. And that's why a lot of these trust disputes land on lawyers' desks.
Well, and then it's expensive. So when, you know, someone, you know, has a sibling who is the executor or trustee, I should say, and calls up the lawyer is going to charge that person to send a letter to get that information. And if necessary, probably file, you know, some sort of lawsuit to get it if it's worth enough money. But in a lot of cases, if the estate is small, it may not be cost effective to hire a lawyer to bring these lawsuits. So it almost seems like sometimes you hit a wall in how to resolve these issues.
So I think cases like Jimmy's happen every day, Karen, and precisely because of what you mentioned in terms of there not being enough money to bring a lawsuit, they don't get resolved. His case is going to get resolved. There's plenty of money to pay the lawyers to resolve this case, but in nine cases out of 10, there just isn't enough money to pay lawyers to resolve it. And so beneficiary rights go unresolved. And an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. There are things you can do in advance to make sure that your family does not come into conflict and does not have to face either exorbitant legal fees to resolve the problem or lack of access to justice entirely because there isn't enough money to pay for the lawyers.
And we had a texter who says, mention the Illinois Adult Protective Services Program. I don't know what that is. Katie, do you know what that is?
Yes. So the Adult Protective Services Program is a program that is specific to financial exploitation, abuse, and neglect of seniors and adults with disabilities. So it is certainly going to be a remedy in situations where there are trusts being mismanaged that involve a senior or an adult with a disability. But if we're just a beneficiary who's of, you know, average age and not disabled, Adult Protective Services will not come in and resolve our trust problem. It is a great remedy for people who are vulnerable, adult, disabled people, and seniors.
So what would a person do? Would a person report the alleged conduct to this organization and they would investigate it?
Correct. Imagine you've got a trustee managing a trust for a disabled adult and they're not managing it correctly. You can call the Adult Protective Services number. It's run through the Department on Aging, and you can make a report that that person is being neglected or financially exploited or not treated correctly. And Adult Protective Services is required under the statute to conduct a face-to-face meeting and investigation within 30 days of the report.
And just another texter had a question about if trusts are private and the problem that we were talking about is that trustees who don't communicate cause the other beneficiaries to be nervous and they don't know what's going on and they don't know when the money is going to be disseminated to everyone, distributed, then are you better off doing a will, which is a matter of public record if it's probated? What are the costs and benefits of both of those?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, there are numerous ways to try to avoid a conflict. The fact is not every family can avoid conflict. Sometimes the states are just naturally going to encounter conflict. And if that is the case, then having a will is a great idea because it is administered by a judge. You know, people use trust to maintain privacy, and privacy is great, but privacy also means that a judge is not involved to monitor how people are behaving and how everything is going. With a will in probate, there is a judge who is supervising the administration of the estate.
And our texter said, please tell Katie this is Holly Lichtman, the APS supervisor at North Shore Senior Center. I guess she's giving you a shout out.
Hi, Holly. Great to hear from you.
And thanks for the text. And there's a couple of other texts that that came in that are a little bit specific that would require an answer that's probably too lengthy for the show, but I'll definitely have Katie, you give us one more time your phone number before we go.
Oh, sure. It's 312-899-0950.